This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Around the corner, touchdown, Ian Book! And we are all tied at 20.
Looney back to Hub for three.
Got it again!
That's a Big Ten Tournament Championship winner!
From 96.1 WSBT.
The Virginia Cavaliers are the national champions.
Here's Yohe with a steal, gives it up, and Johnson throws it down.
Fires, it's caught, touchdown, T.Y. Hilton.
The sports leader.
Henry! Allow myself to introduce myself.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
And we thank you for joining us. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. It is Sports Beat from home, and this is day number 43 of our social distancing. Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett from our respective homes, our producer back in the studios, Jerry Janowski. We have a shortened Sports Beat tonight. We're on from 5 until 6 because ESPN Radio's coverage of Day 2 of the 2020 NFL Draft will get underway at 6 o'clock. The actual selections will start a little after 7 o'clock. And we are here to talk about Notre Dame players who possibly, and maybe we should say more than likely, will hear their names called tonight because we have the second and third round tonight for the National Football League Draft. So we'll talk NFL draft storylines. We'll talk about some possible landing spots for the Notre Dame players in round two and three. And we'll look back at last night, day one of the NFL draft, with our My Five question of the day. Sean's five favorite moments of last night's NFL draft first round. I don't think dogs got involved in the draft. There were a few kids running around, but everybody, I think, was on their P's and Q's. Some of the coaches had very generic setups. Then you have Cliff Kingsbury, who was sitting in the front room of his house, and it looked like he was from the premium show Billions. I mean, that house was impressive. Had those doors that open up, the walls are doors, and they just open up in the summertime. It must be rough being the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals.
No doubt. I mean, he's got it going out there. That's for sure. Cliff Kingsbury has just about got it all, based on the spread that he's got, and he got some talent last night with Isaiah Simmons, and of course he got Kyler Murray last year. They just keep adding to it.
And then you have Jerry Jones, the Cowboys owner, who, when I first saw his setting, it looked like it was just some elaborate room in his house that had some interesting decorating and interesting lighting. Right. I mean, it was still pretty top end. Don't get me wrong. And then come to find out, you see a wider shot. There's like a dining room and everything. I mean, it's just beautiful. And then you pull back a little farther. He's on his yacht.
On a yacht.
I mean, come on. But I'll say this. If I was worth billions like Jerry, and if I'm in a pandemic, I think I would just go live on my boat as well.
I mean, let's face it. There's a TV show called Billions, and Jerry Jones could have his own show called Billions, for that matter. A $250 million yacht that he was on. And I agree. I saw the background, and I didn't realize it either. And it's just kind of all white, and the walls were white, but they had the big screen TV behind him. And then some people started showing some old pictures of what is essentially the same room minus the TV and Jerry Jones sitting in the middle of it. And lo and behold, yep, he's sitting on his $250 million yacht doing the NFL draft.
That's what the boat is worth.
$250 million. Yep.
Wow.
Well, he built the stadium for over $1 billion. So, I mean, you know, come on. You got to have priorities, right?
He puts Dr. Evil to shame with his setups. Come on now. Okay. We've got a little sports beat talk to get to tonight. Again, we just have an hour to work with. And let's just go through a couple of headlines to start things off. Again, no Notre Dame players went last night in round one. We could see four or five tonight. More on that in a couple of moments. And a really interesting storyline that developed today is the fact that the Irish women's basketball team got a huge verbal commitment today. Neil Ivey is not messing around as new head coach. Olivia Miles, considered the second best player in the class of 2021, according to her social media account, verbally committed to the Fighting Irish today. Connecticut, Oregon, Stanford, among the other teams, going after her services. She has played internationally in competitions for the United States. And this is a tremendous talent, considered the top point guard. And again, ESPN's number two player in the class of 2021. So you talk about jumping right into the fire. I'm sure the foundation of the recruiting has been going on for some time, but obviously Olivia likes what she sees and hears from Neil Ivey. Holy cow.
I mean, and I tell you what, I saw the video. I saw some Euro step. I saw some straight drive, spin moves, step back, three-pointers. She's got moves for everything, and you're right, Neil Ivey going right to work and getting one of the top players in the country for next year's draft. Or not draft, a signing
right.
class.
Right.
We're talking about NFL draft. I got draft on the mind.
Let's hope she doesn't go to the G League and just skip college. Yeah. Let's hope she comes to college.
That's right.
So big day for the Irish women's basketball program. Congratulations to Coach Ivey as they pick up an elite guard in the 2021 class, Olivia Miles. Sean, let's get to some NFL draft. Round one storylines. There were 32 selections in last night's National Football League draft. And let's go through some of the more interesting topics from last night. I'm going to begin with Urban Meyer. Even though he's not a part of an NFL team, he was a huge part of the draft last night. The first three picks, all recruited by Urban Meyer to Ohio yep. State, and they were all teammates at Ohio State in 2017. Joe Burrow, of course, would transfer to LSU and win the Heisman Trophy. He goes number one to Cincinnati. Chase Young, one of the more elite pass rushers in some time. He comes from Ohio State and goes to the Washington Redskins. And Jeff Okuda is taken by the Detroit Lions, and he is an outstanding corner from Ohio State. So Columbus well represented in the opening parts of the draft, and I guess it's a little reminder why they always win that last regular season football game every year.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
I mean, they have been a regular season team, that's for sure, and they have dominated Michigan, that's for sure. And you don't see Wolverines going like this at the top of the draft. You didn't hear there was one Wolverine called
center.
Last night, and that was a center. Yeah, exactly. Cesar Ruiz, and that was it. The first time ever that the top three picks have ever come or have ever been teammates at one point in their career. Pretty amazing, and there were some other guys from Ohio State who ended up getting called later on as well.
Very chalky at the top of the draft. I thought there would be a little more excitement, but everything went a little more chalk last night. In fact,
yeah,
I believe, was it the Lions have talked about they really did not truly get an offer for that number three pick? There was a lot of conversation, but no true offers. And as we move into our second storyline, Tua Tagovailoa of Alabama goes to the Miami Dolphins at number five. I applaud Miami. It's the right choice.
Yeah,
but they threw a tremendous smokescreen. They had all of us buying that Herbert was going to be their choice. When they were just playing coy, they were trying to get people to jump up to take Herbert and leave Tua for them. And sure enough, they go with the Alabama quarterback again. I've been on Tua's side the whole time. I think the skill set is too good to pass up, even with the injury history. So I applaud the Dolphins. I thought they had a tremendous night last night, and the centerpiece of their great work centers around going with the Alabama quarterback. So I applaud them. Job well done, and they're coming fast in the AFC
yeah.
East.
I mean, all the picks, they had three first-round picks last night, and that's why they knew that they didn't necessarily have to go out and make a move. I think if you read the tea leaves a little bit, maybe it means that both the Chargers and Dolphins felt like, well, if we don't feel like we've got to spend a lot to move up, because maybe we would be satisfied with either one of them. But ultimately, I do feel like for the Dolphins or whoever it happened to be, that Tua should have been the number two guy as far as the quarterbacks taken in the draft. I think it's a good pick for the Dolphins.
I'm excited for Miami, but I'll say this. It would not shock me. Nor would I say this is not a bad idea if Tua just doesn't sit out next year.
I completely agree.
Body, another year of just getting better, getting stronger, getting more comfortable, and then after a year of just sitting and watching, which can be valuable to a lot of people, then you let him go in 2021. But I would imagine it's going to be tough to keep him off the field. just because the fans are going to want him, Tua's going to want to play, but the Dolphins are going to have to probably be very resilient in trying to not throw him out there right away, which is so easy to do when you have such a talented guy joining your football team, especially at the quarterback position.
Yeah, I would look long and hard about just keeping him on the bench for at least a month. You've got a couple veterans still. You've got Rosen, you've got Fitzmagic, and all that. So, yeah. And it's not like the Dolphins are going to go out and be a big competitor for a playoff spot, or at least we don't expect this year. They're probably at least still another year away. So there's no reason to rush Tua on the field.
Okay, let's go now to the wide receiver conversation last night. It has been well documented, one of the all-time deepest wide receiver groups in NFL draft history, and it took a little while for the wide receivers to pop up. As expected, Sean, it was a quarterback offensive tackle draft last night, as we saw. Boy, those offensive tackles go quickly. Tampa Bay moved up one spot to make sure they got the fourth of those offensive tackles last night, moving from 14 to 13. So with all the quarterback and offensive tackles, all of a sudden you had the first wide receiver going at number 12 to the Las Vegas Raiders. And I think people are judging the Raiders a little incorrectly. This is just my opinion. Most people that do this for a living, they felt like that Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb were the best two wide receivers of this great group. And personally, right, I agree with that. They're more number one wide receivers. They're more of those guys that carry the load. They can play on the outside. They can play on the inside as well. But Ruggs is a slot guy. He's a speed guy. He's a vertical threat. While Lamb and Jeudy are more of the precision route runners. That's not necessarily what Ruggs is supposed to do. He is supposed to open up the defense, like we have seen Will Fuller do when healthy for the Houston Texans. So because Ruggs went first, I think there's a little misconception. Oh, the Raiders, how could they pass on the other two? Well, they're looking for a different type of wide receiver, and this is what we've talked about a lot with Chase Claypool. There are so many shapes and sizes, elite wide receivers in this particular draft. It's just exactly what you're looking for when you're going shopping. Which one do you want to go after? What are the traits? And I think that's the whole situation. I can't blame the Raiders for taking Ruggs. I mean, he is an absolute speed threat, like Tyreek Hill of the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll see if he can be a dominating factor like Hill. Let's see what he does with the Las Vegas Raiders. But I think it's unfair to go after the Raiders in this spot, and they are the team I despise more than any, being a Bronco fan. I don't like to give them any credit, but I think it's been a little unfair. Yeah, I think Jeudy and Lamb are better overall football players, but this guy has the speed factor that a lot of teams, in fact, most teams are looking for right now in the National Football League, and they just decided to go for that big-time vertical threat, and I really can't say that they did the wrong thing. It's kind of who the Raiders are through the years, even without Al Davis.
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, that is who the Raiders are. That's for sure, and that's you heard a lot of Al Davis comparisons when they made this pick, that it's you chuck it long and see what happens. That's they always wanted to get vertical. The Raiders did in the Al Davis days, and I mean, I can see what you're saying. If they have a vision for what they want this offense, their offense, to be, I don't know if Derek Carr is even necessarily that guy. But at the same time, what they're doing is not necessarily what the NFL has morphed into over the last few years. It's a lot more of the shorter precision type stuff and routes and getting the ball out quick and those kind of things. So if that's what they want to build it around, that's fine. But I still think that at number 12, Ruggs was a bit of a reach. But,
okay.
I mean, time will tell. Time tells on all these different things. But I think it's a bit of a reach. And, I mean, I know I was more than happy with how things worked out in terms of the receivers in the first round. I don't know how you felt about Jerry Jeudy going to the Broncos just a few picks later.
Well, I'll say this. The problem is with Ruggs going to the Raiders, they don't necessarily have a quarterback that's good throwing the deep ball, Carr, and they got Mariota now from Tennessee signed as a free agent. So it's not like they have that gunslinger that's accurate throwing the ball deep down the field. But that's what the Raiders went for last night. And I know my son and I are both Bronco fans, and we're watching this draft unfold. We got to 9. That's when we started really thinking about, all right, Denver's at 15. I wanted to walk away with one of the two best wide receivers, and that being Judy or Lamb. So I felt like when the Jaguars came on the clock, that's when the wide receivers became part of the conversation. Up until that point, I didn't think any wide receiver was going to be taken, and none were taken. So you go C.J. Henderson from Florida, the corner. Boy, the look on his face being drafted by the Jaguars. I felt so like the family's excited, and I'm thinking the family doesn't know who the Jaguars are because, boy, he's going to be looking forward to 4 years from now. So when they went corner, I'm like, okay, well, that's a good start, but there's still a lot of roadblocks to get one of those top two. I'm not surprised Cleveland went offensive tackle. That made sense. But the Jets were the one I wasn't sure what they were going to do. I felt like they had to go wide receiver, but they have a needed tackle, and they went with Becton from Louisville. So that's when my son and I looked at each other like, hey, you know what? There's a chance one of those two could slip to us at 15. I figured Oakland was going to take a receiver, but they didn't take one of those two, so that was good. When Tampa Bay moved, you knew they were going offensive tackle, and they got worse from Iowa. And San Francisco, I figured they were going to take Lamb or Jury at that point, but they went with Kinlaw, the defensive tackle from South Carolina. So how about John Lynch, the GM? He trades DeForest Buckner to the Colts, an all-pro defensive tackle due for a payday. He didn't want to pay him the big bucks, so he shipped him to Indianapolis. They gave him $20 million a year. He gets the number 13 pick back. He then flips that for number 14 and a pick later. He gets the replacement for DeForest Buckner at a rookie rate, so he saves a ton of money. And then he's able to come back later on at pick number 25 in a trade, and they take what they say is the number one wide receiver on their board in Brandon Ayuk from Arizona State, who has the 81-inch wingspan, and he's not 6 foot tall, which is like an octopus almost. So I think Lynch did one heck of a job in this draft. If Kinlaw works out and you ship an elite player, don't get me wrong, but you don't want to pay him $20 million a year, and I can understand that from the interior of the defensive line. So you get the pick, and it's his replacement, plus on the backside you get a wide receiver and another pick out of the deal. So I think the 49ers did a pretty good job. We'll see if it all pans out, but the thinking I thought was pretty creative by Lynch and the 49ers, and it couldn't have worked out any better for them, I don't think.
Yeah, and I mean, the way Lynch approached the draft is also why I still think it's a reach at number 12 for the Raiders to get Henry Ruggs, because I don't know if there was maybe a partner that they could have traded down with, but that would have seemed to make more sense to me is move down, and you probably still get your guy, and you get some extra picks as a result of it as well. And I do still also wonder with Jerry Jeudy, because looking at the film and the comparisons, there's a lot of comparisons to Amari Cooper, whom the Raiders just traded a couple of years ago. Did he necessarily fit what they were looking for? But I mean, some great moves that you're talking about there with Lynch. And as far as CeeDee Lamb getting to the Cowboys, I did not go into the night even thinking about a wide receiver in the first round. And my son and I were texting at the start, and he mentioned a wide receiver earlier in the draft. And I'm like, the only two guys that I would consider would be Judy and Lamb, but there's no way either one of them is going to be available by the time number 17 comes up. And then boom, 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 the way the ripple effect rolled, Lamb was there. Judy was almost there, but the Broncos got him right before that. So I think for Dallas, it was just a great move because they did something that they haven't done in recent years, and they prioritized high-end talent over necessarily a need that they had in the first round. They went out and got a really talented football player that they rated as the number six guy overall that they didn't think was going to be there, but he was.
Well, when Kinlaw was taken by San Francisco, there were high fives in the man cave knowing we have our choice of the best two wide receivers. And I thought we might go Lamb, honestly, but I was actually, Judy was the guy I wanted all along. I was just going by the tea leaves that maybe Lamb was going to be the guy, but Judy was number one on our draft board, and his precision route running, I'm just enamored with. Here's the thing I want to say about Lamb, and this is not a negative. You know, he ran a 4.5 40, which I don't get, because he looks extremely elusive and fast when you watch Oklahoma tape. That, I mean, Chase Claypool ran a better 40 than CeeDee Lamb, but if you watch them in a game, there's no way you would say that Claypool is faster than Lamb. And that's not a negative toward Claypool. Lamb looks explosive on film, but he was slow in the 40.
Yeah, and he averaged over 21 yards per catch last year as well. You're right. I was surprised when I saw that as well, that with CeeDee Lamb. That what they get with Lamb, though, is, and I mean, you get this with Claypool, too, but it's a different kind of versatility get with Lamb. And they're mostly looking at him as a slot right now, but they can also put him at either outside position if they want. And again, like back to Judy, what we were talking about, just the route running and everything. Such a comparison when you compare his film to Amari Cooper. That's the kind of guy that Jerry Judy is. And I mean, that's the kind of thing that you produce at Alabama as well, is guys who are really technical sound in their fundamentals.
Well, if Jerry Judy turns out to be the player I think he is, you're going to get sick of me saying, "All rise, Judge Judy has entered his chambers."
You're right about that.
Judge Judy, get where I'm going there?
I get where you're going.
All rise. We'll see what happens. Okay, very interesting night, and we'll close with this. The Green Bay Packers go with Utah State quarterback Jordan Love, and they move up to 26 to take whom we assume will be the replacement for Aaron Rodgers, who is 36 years old, and oddly enough, before the draft last night, he was on a radio show and talked about how, you know what, I would be okay with a quarterback, but, you know, no one's going to beat me out. I still have a lot left in the tank, and I'll be happy to call him and welcome him. Well, sure enough, not only did the Packers take their alleged quarterback of the future, they move up to take him. And how about the last time the Packers took a skill position offensive player was Aaron Rodgers? They have not given him any help, and this is the big debate. You get to the NFC Championship. You're a win away from the Super Bowl, and rather than adding a piece with all these high-end skill players out there, they go for the future. You can look at it a lot of different ways. I'll say this, Sean. The Green Bay Packers made the NFC Championship. I don't believe they're the second-best team in the NFC, and I think there will be a step back coming up this year. So I don't think they were necessarily one player away from getting to the Super Bowl. So I get what they were doing. The only thing I have a hard time buying is their general manager saying, well, there wasn't an impact guy at our pick, so that's why we went with Love. Had there been an impact guy there, we would have taken him. That's very disrespectful to a lot of outstanding players that we are going to hear their names called in the next couple of hours, early in round number two. I mean, DeAndre Swift, the running back from Georgia, you think he could help the running game a little bit? You can add a wide receiver. I just thought it was an odd explanation.
Yeah, I mean, this is not the 1970s and 1980s when you drafted a quarterback and he sat for 3 or 4 years before he becomes your starter. That's not where we are right now. You've got rookies starting right away, and by year two, they're expected to go and be a guy who can get you to the playoffs. So by trading up to get Jordan Love, he's not going to give you any impact this year or next year. So I mean, maybe it's next year, but if it's next year, that means Aaron Rodgers is gone, and you still don't have anybody for him to throw the football to. So I think it's pretty surprising, and I think that there was, I completely disagree with that. I think there was a lot of impact they could have gone out and gotten if they wanted to there.
This felt like when Dan Reeves selected Tommy Maddox late in the first round, and this was like 91 or 92.
92, I think,
when John Elway is still in his prime in Denver. And that really ticked off Elway, and it would tick off most quarterbacks in that spot. And we know how Aaron Rodgers is a little – he'll hold grudges, it feels like. I mean – when we went through the whole, his brother was on The Bachelorette or whatever, we found out there's no relationship between Aaron and some of his family.
He just seems like a guy that's going to hold a grudge, and you just wonder how he's going to react to this. I'm expecting he'll be a professional. He'll deal with it. But I'm deep down, he can't be happy when you're late in your career trying to win a second Super Bowl and you don't help your football team in the first round of this draft after getting to the NFC title game. It would be very frustrating. I will say this, Rodgers has been a little banged up. His play seemed to dip last year. Not saying he's done. He's over the hill. But you wonder if the curve in his career has started where he might start to take a step back. In that case, this may look more brilliant down the line, but I just wonder how good Jordan Love can be. We have seen him against less than stellar competition at the collegiate level, and I know people are talking about all the personnel he lost last year. That affected his game. You should still be able to dominate the level of play that he was – well, the level he was playing at last year.
Yeah,
so I think there's a lot to be proven. I mean, Aaron Rodgers was more proven when the Packers took him compared to Love this year.
Shoes on the other foot, though. The exact same thing that happened with Brett Favre. You know, Brett Favre 15 years ago, they drafted Rodgers in the first round. Favre wasn't happy about it either, right. And it didn't take long. Rodgers becomes the starter. So it's going to be really interesting to watch because I just have a feeling that Aaron Rodgers, I mean, he might be the Patriots quarterback in a couple years for all we know.
Well, I guess his guaranteed money runs out after next year.
Right. There's some kind of opt-out. Yeah.
Then we'll see what happens in Green Bay. Sean and Darren with you. SportsBeat on WSBT Radio. Coming up next, a Sports Center update. And then we'll take a look at the Notre Dame players whose names could be called tonight during rounds 2 and 3 of the NFL draft. We'll go through that process in just a moment from 96.1 WSBT and live on the SportsBeat app. Sports Beat from Home continues, brought to you by Budweiser, locally distributed by United Beverage of South Bend, who urges you to stay home, stay safe, stay fun. The Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. And by Rossini's Pizza. Carry out, you're proud to bring home, Lincoln Way East in Mishawaka, across from Beeger School. Let's dig into Notre Dame players who could have their names called tonight in the National Football League draft. Again, rounds 2 and 3 will take place tonight. Now, a little background, 5 Notre Dame first-round picks over the last 4 years, none last night. And just to refresh your memory, back in 2016, Ronnie Stanley went number 6 to the Ravens, Will Fuller number 21 to the Texans. In 2018, a pair of offensive linemen go in the top 10. At number 5, Quentin Nelson to the Colts. At number 9, Mike McGlinchey to the 49ers. And then last year, at 28, the Chargers went with defensive lineman Jerry Tillery. So, what's going to happen tonight? Let's talk about the first Notre Dame player off the board tonight. Many believe it's Cole Kmet. Others say it's Chase Claypool. A wild card is Romeo Okwara, and the correct answer will be
Cole Kmet. I have him going second round. Well, obviously second round. Well, I guess not obviously. Anyway, I've got him going 50, number 50 to the Bears with the Bears' second pick in the second round. I've got him going at number 50 to Chicago.
So you've took a little step back from the last time we talked.
Yeah, and I mean,
did Sharpley get to you or something?
He must have. I had him sneaking into the first round last night and just kind of looking at who's there. I think the Bears and Colts both make some sense. I've got both of those teams using, you know, other picks with their first pick of the second round before they address tight end, though.
Well, I'm going to go with kind of a wild card team, a team I really hadn't thought about a whole lot. But I'm going to take a stab at Kmet going number 38 to the Carolina Panthers. Greg Olsen was let go by Carolina. I mean, a long time tight end for the Panthers. Actually spent a little time at Notre Dame before transferring to Miami of Florida. And right now their top tight end is Ian Thomas, a 2018 draft pick out of Indiana, who had 18 catches last year. So to me, there's a chance for an upgrade when I think about the coaching staff there in Carolina. They're going to want to run that football, even though they got Bridgewater. You got McCaffrey down there. And Kmet is working on becoming a better blocker at this time. So I'm just going to take a wild stab. Carolina going with Kmet at number 38. Next up on our list, let's talk about wide receiver Chase Claypool. Well, wide receivers, a lot happened last night in that area. Ruggs went to the Raiders at 12. You had Judy at 15 to the Broncos. Lamb to the Cowboys at 17. Then back-to-back at 21 and 22, Jalen Reagor from TCU, and then Justin Jefferson from LSU. He went to the Minnesota Vikings. Brandon Ayuk, from Arizona State goes 25th to the San Francisco 49ers. So quite a few off the board. Many more will come off the board tonight. So Chase Claypool is a guy I think many would consider between number 10 and number 15 on the wide receiver board. So what do you think about Claypool tonight? Will his weight be extensive?
I think it will be. I think he's going to go tonight, but I think he's going to wait a little bit longer than he wants to. And, I mean, I think we all still see second-round potential in this guy, and as Mel Kiper said, first-round potential even. But I've got him going at number 90 overall, third round to the Houston Texans. They have a need for wide receiver. They have an early pick tonight after that trade. But I see him sliding down into the third round to the Texans.
Wow, okay. Well, when I made my original pick here, I felt good, but like you, I'm a little more hesitant to place him where I have him. I originally had him going to the Jets at number 48. It makes a lot of sense because they need a wide receiver, and they went offensive tackle last night in round one, so the need is there. And I'm going to still say the Jets are going to take him, but I'm going to move him back to round three and number 68. I'm just a little concerned about the number of wide receivers on the board. We have not seen a running back run yet outside of the Chiefs taking the LSU running back. I feel like there's a few of those that are going to go. And eventually we'll get back into the quarterbacks from Eason, Hurts. So I'm going to take a step back as well from my original pick. I'm going to say Claypool at number 68. I hope I do not regret.
Okay.
I hope I don't regret changing, because you know what happens when you change. 48 to 68, that's a big jump.
That's what they say. Go with your gut instinct, right?
Well, then I should go with 48 then. Okay. Edge rusher Julian Okwara, huge junior year, a step back this year, an injury, ended his season early. But mock drafts have him all over the place, from first round to early fourth round. What is your prediction for Okwara tonight?
I've got a good vibe for Julian Okwara tonight. And, I went into last night thinking the Cowboys at number 17 were sitting there looking at Kalevon Chaisson from LSU, the defensive end. But as that CeeDee Lamb started creeping closer, my son texted me right before, and he said, "What would you do?" And I said, "Draft Lamb here, and then get Julian Okwara in the second round." So I've got Julian going to Dallas at number 51 tonight.
Okay, so that's about the middle of the second round. That's interesting thinking right there. Well, I'm in the same ballpark. I've got Okwara going number 60 to the Baltimore Ravens. They took a pretty good defensive player last night. I still think there's the ability to add another pass rusher as a number two guy there in Baltimore. So I'm going to go with Okwara at 60 to the Baltimore Ravens. Next up in our predictions for Notre Dame players tonight, or possibly tomorrow at the NFL draft, another edge, Khalid Kareem, who I think had a tremendous last couple of years with the Fighting Irish, and I would love to have him on my football team. But what about Mr. Kareem? Is he going to be able to have his name called tonight?
I don't think we're going to hear from Mr. Kareem tonight. There just hasn't been enough good buzz about Khalid Kareem. He's just kind of one of those guys in the middle of the draft, and that's kind of where I think we're going to see him. I've got him going in the fifth round, so that'll be a Saturday pick, 140th overall, going to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Okay. Well, Kareem actually doesn't fit the scheme of my team, but in general, I'd love to have him on my football team. So there hasn't been a lot of buzz about Kareem. I just love the fact he played through a major injury, didn't want to have surgery. He wanted to finish his year with his team, and he did that, and he played very, very well for the Fighting Irish. I think he'll be a really good guy at stuffing the run at the National Football League level. And I'm going to have him the same vicinity as you, eight picks apart. I'm going to go with Kareem going in the fourth round, pick number 132, to the Minnesota Vikings. They've got some tweaking to do along their defensive line, so I will put Kareem there. We have three more to go from the Notre Dame draft class. Let's go with cornerback Troy Pride Jr. Will he have his name called tonight?
Another guy I'm really trying to figure out, because we've heard his name as high as the second round, but I've got him going in the fourth round, 141st overall to Miami.
Okay, I'm going to go with the New Orleans Saints at 88. They've got Janoris Jenkins and Mashon Lattimore, but they need a little depth help, maybe a nickel for the New Orleans Saints. So I will send Pride to the Bayou to play for New Orleans, round number three, pick number 88. We end with a pair of safeties, Aloe Gilman. What about Aloe? Where will he end up?
Well, I've got I'm going to be happy once again because I've got him going in the fifth round to the Cowboys. Dallas needs a safety. They might take somebody else with a bigger name early on. I think they're going to get a couple for depth. I've got Alohi going in the fifth round, 179th to Dallas.
Well, again, we're in the same ballpark. I've got Gilman going 185, sixth round pick of the upstart Miami Dolphins. I think he's got a chance to make a roster. He's going to be a special team star early on, and that can be a difference maker in a guy making a team or not making a team, adding a little something on special teams. We know Aloe can do that. Terrific coverage guy. Yep. Last but not least, how about safety Jalen Elliott?
Jalen had a bad 40 time at the combine, and there just has been zero buzz on him. I've got him getting drafted, but going in the seventh round on Saturday, 235th overall to the Detroit Lions.
All right. I've got him being drafted as well. One of the comp picks at the end of the seventh round, number 247, going to the New York Football Giants, who shocked me last night by going with Thomas, the tackle from Georgia. I thought he was the fourth best of the four tackles that went early on in the draft, but the Giants, they always seem to do things that are against the grain. They do what they believe. And Daniel Jones was a big criticism last year. There won't be the same criticism this year. There's a big difference in a quarterback and a tackle. But I was shocked when they took Thomas out of Georgia rather than going with Wirfs or Willis or even Becton, to be quite frank.
Yeah, I agree. Wow. I thought either any one of those three were going to go before him. But that's not the way it worked out.
Well, maybe there's a reason why the Giants are picking fourth. They're picking in the top 10 again.
That's right.
We'll see. My five question of the day, the favorite moments from the draft last night. We'll tell you coming up next, Sports Beat, right before we go to ESPN Radio's coverage of the NFL draft in 11 minutes on 96.1 WSBT and live on the Sports Beat app.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Today's My Five Question of the Day with Sean and Darren. Sean's five favorite moments of last night's NFL draft round number one, which, by the way, record telecast last night. More than 15.6 million people tuned in. It is the most watched draft ever, up 37% from last year. And the old record was 12.4 million viewers back in 2014. So the best moments of last night, we start with number five.
I've got a tie here with a couple of the oddities. Giants general manager Dave Gettleman taking germ safety to a new level, sitting in his own basement wearing a protective mask, essentially protecting himself from his own germs. To each his own, I guess. And then you've got Titans head coach Mike Vrabel's son sitting on the porcelain throne in the background of a shot of Vrabel in his draft headquarter in his basement. Classic.
They claim that was not the case, but it sure looked like it.
I know that's what they say, but the kid sure looked like, he was in position.
Okay, number four.
Henry Ruggs getting drafted, then standing up in a bathrobe. It turned out that it was sponsored by Old Spice, but only in the first ever virtual draft could a guy get selected in the first round wearing a bathrobe.
Number three.
Now, I know we disagree on this, but to me, I felt like the Raiders reached with both of their first-round picks. They went with Alabama receiver Henry Ruggs at number 12. Wasn't even the number one-rated Alabama receiver, let alone number one overall. Then they went with Ohio State cornerback Damon Arnett at number 19, and I've seen him rated as a top eight at best. He was the third corner off the board last night.
Second-best moment last night.
The Packers trading up with Houston to take Utah State quarterback Jordan Love, and I just love the irony here. 15 years after the Packers took Aaron Rodgers in the first round when they had Brett Favre and he was looking for win-now offensive help, the Packers take Love when Rodgers is looking for win-now offensive talent. So how long till Rodgers is playing for the Vikings is my question.
And the number one moment from last night's NFL draft round number one.
Well, personal, of course, it was Dallas taking CeeDee Lamb at number 17, and Jerry Jones had him as their number six overall player. They didn't think that they were going to have the chance to draft him. They were planning on addressing an immediate need with an edge rusher, a defensive back. He kept sliding and sliding. Jones made the choice to take the best available talent, in his opinion. So I like the move.
I thought number one was going to be Lamb taking the phone away from the female sitting next to him. When she grabbed the phone,
too.
He grabbed it right back, showing quick hands.
Got it right back. That's right.
That's the My Five. We'll wrap up Sports Beat next. NFL draft coverage in about 4 minutes on WSBT South Bend. Sports Beat on WSBT Radio, brought to you by Budweiser. Locally distributed by United Beverage of South Bend, who urges you to stay home, stay safe, stay fun. The Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. And Rossini's Pizza. Carry out, you're proud to bring home. Lincoln Way East in Mishawaka, across from Beeger School. When I mentioned Todd McShay from Scout and ESPN, he's dealing with the coronavirus. He's not a part of the coverage, but his top wide receivers available tonight, he's got Chase Claypool as the fifth best wide receiver available left on the board in the 2020 NFL draft. Still very competitive. The names right after him, high quality. Sean, we look forward to rounds two and three coming up, and we'll talk to you on Monday.
All right, sounds good. Have a good weekend.
Thanks to Jerry. ESPN Radio, here comes draft coverage on WSBT South.